And hello, SunSounds listeners, and happy holidays. This is Andy Bombeck, which means, once again, it's time for the Children's Story Hour. And as always, I'm glad you could join me today for a good variety of children's stories. Unlike always, today I'm going to read all holiday picture books. And these are the books that I'm planning on reading. I'm going to start off with the classic, How the Grinch Stole Christmas. And then another classic and favorite of mine, The Polar Express. And then it's A Curious George Holiday. A Very Marley Christmas about the dog. Mendel's Hanukkah Mess Up. The Night Before Christmas. And if we have time, I'll read Santa from Cincinnati and The Biggest, Smallest Christmas Present. So, it should be a lot of fun today. Let's get started with our first holiday picture book titled, How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Every Who down in Whoville liked Christmas a lot. But the Grinch, who lived just north of Whoville, did not. The Grinch hated Christmas, the whole Christmas season. Now please don't ask why, no one quite knows the reason. It could be his head wasn't screwed on just right. It could be, perhaps, that his shoes were too tight. But I think that the most likely reason of all may have been that his heart was two sizes too small. But whatever the reason, his heart or his shoes, he stood there on Christmas Eve hating the Whos. Staring down from his cave with a sour, grinchy frown at the warm lighted windows below in their town. For he knew every Who down in Whoville beneath was busy now hanging a mistletoe wreath. And they're hanging their stockings, he snarled with a sneer. Tomorrow is Christmas. It's practically here. Then he growled with his Grinch fingers, nervously drumming, I must find some way to stop Christmas from coming, for tomorrow, he knew. All the Who girls and boys would wake bright and early. They'd rush for their toys. And then, oh, the noise. Oh, the noise. Noise, noise, noise. That's one thing he hated. The noise, 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 noise. Then the Whos, young and old, would sit down to a feast, and they'd feast, and they'd feast, and they'd feast, 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 feast. They would feast on Who pudding and rare Who roast beast, which was something the Grinch couldn't stand in the least. And then they'd do something he liked least of all. Every Who down in Whoville, the tall and the small, would stand close together. With Christmas bells ringing, they'd stand hand in hand, and the Whos would start singing. They'd sing, and they'd sing, and they'd sing, 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 sing. And the more the Grinch thought of this Who Christmas sing, the more Grinch thought, I must stop this whole thing. Why, for 53 years, I've put up with it now. I must stop this Christmas from coming. But how? Then he got an idea, an awful idea. The Grinch got a wonderful, awful idea. I know just what to do, the Grinch laughed in his throat. And he made a quick Santa Claus hat and a coat. And he chuckled and he clucked, what a great Grinchy trick. With this coat and this hat, I look just like Saint Nick. All I need is a reindeer. The Grinch looked around, but since reindeer are scarce, there was none to be found. Did that stop the old Grinch? No. The Grinch simply said, if I can't find a reindeer, I'll make one instead. So he called his dog Max, then he took some red thread, and he tied a big horn on the top of his head. Then he loaded some bags and some old empty sacks on a ramshackle sleigh, and he hitched up old Max. Then the Grinch said, giddy up, and the sleigh started down, toward the homes where the Whos lay a snooze in their town. All their windows were dark. Quiet snow filled the air. All the Whos were all dreaming sweet dreams without care. When he came to the first little house on the square, "This is stop number one," the old Grinchy Claus hissed, and he climbed to the roof, empty bags in his fist. Then he slid down the chimney, a rather tight pinch. But if Santa could do it, then so could the Grinch. He got stuck only once for a moment or two. Then he stuck his head out of the fireplace flue, where the little Who stockings all hung in a row. "These stockings," he grinned, "are the first things to go." Then he slithered and slunk, with a smile most unpleasant, around the whole room, and he took every present. Pop guns, bicycles, roller skates, drums, checkerboard, tricycles, popcorn, and plums. And he stuffed them in bags. Then the Grinch, very nimbly, stuffed all the bags, one by one, up the chimney. Then he slunk to the icebox. He took the Who's feast. He took the Who pudding. He took the roast beast. He cleaned out that icebox as quick as a flash. Why, that Grinch even took their last can of Who hash. Then he stuffed all the food up the chimney with glee. "And now," grinned the Grinch, "I will stuff up the tree." And the Grinch grabbed the tree, and he started to shove, when he heard a small sound like the coo of a dove. He turned around fast, and he saw a small Who, little Cindy Lou Who, who was not more than two. The Grinch had been caught by this tiny Who daughter, who'd got out of bed for a cup of cold water. She stared at the Grinch and said, "Santa Claus, why? Why are you taking our Christmas tree? Why?" But, you know, that old Grinch was so smart and so slick. He thought up a lie, and he thought it up quick. "Why, my sweet little tot," the fake Santa Claus lied, "oh, there's a light on this tree that won't light on one side. So I'm taking it home to my workshop, my dear. I'll fix it up there, then I'll bring it back here." And his fib fooled the child. Then he patted her head, and he got her a drink, and he sent her to bed. And when Cindy Lou Who went to bed with her cup, he went to the chimney and stuffed the tree up. Then the last thing he took was the log for their fire. Then he went up the chimney himself, the old liar. On their walls, he left nothing but hooks and some wire. And the one speck of food that he left in the house was a crumb that was even too small for a mouse. Then he did the same thing to the other Who's houses, leaving crumbs much too small for the other Who's mouses. It was quarter past dawn, all the Who's still abed, all the Who's still a snooze, when he packed up his sled, packed it up with their presents, the ribbons, the wrappings, the tags, and the tinsel, the trimmings, the trappings. 3,000 feet up the side of Mount Crumpet, he rode with his load to the tip-top to dump it. "Pooh-hoo to the Who's," he was grinishingly humming. "They're finding out now that no Christmas is coming. They're just waking up. I know just what they'll do. Their mouths will hang open a minute or two, and then the Who's down in Whoville will all cry boo-hoo." "That's a noise," grinned the Grinch, "that I simply must hear." So he paused, and the Grinch put his hand to his ear. And he did hear a sound rising over the snow. It started in low, then it started to grow. But the sound wasn't sad. Why, this sound sounded merry. It couldn't be so, but it was merry, very. He stared down at Whoville. The Grinch popped his eyes. Then he shook. What he saw was a shocking surprise. Every Who down in Whoville, the tall and the small, was singing, without any presents at all. He hadn't stopped Christmas from coming. It came, Somehow or other, it came just the same. And the Grinch, with his Grinch feet ice cold in the snow, stood puzzling and puzzling. How could it be so? It came without ribbons. It came without tags. It came without packages, boxes, or bags. And he puzzled 3 hours till his puzzler was sore. Then the Grinch thought of something he hadn't before. Maybe Christmas, he thought, doesn't come from a store. Maybe Christmas, perhaps, means a little bit more. And what happened then? Well, in Whoville, they say, that the Grinch's small heart grew 3 sizes that day. And the minute his heart didn't feel quite so tight, he whizzed with his load through the bright morning light. And he brought back the toys and the food for the feast. And he himself, the Grinch, carved the roast beast. Now, possibly my all-time favorite holiday book, The Polar Express. On Christmas Eve, many years ago, I lay quietly in my bed. I did not rustle the sheets. I breathed slowly and silently. I was listening for a sound. A sound a friend had told me I'd never hear. The ringing bells of Santa's sleigh. There is no Santa, my friend had insisted. But I knew he was wrong. Later that night, I did hear sounds, though not of ringing bells. From outside came the sounds of hissing steam and squeaking metal. I looked through my window and saw a train standing perfectly still in front of my house. It was wrapped in an apron of steam. Snowflakes fell lightly around it. A conductor stood at the open door of one of the cars. He took a large pocket watch from his vest, then looked up at my window. I put on my slippers and robe. I tiptoed downstairs and out the door. "All aboard!" the conductor cried out. I ran up to him.
"Well," he said, "are you coming?"
"Where?" I asked.
"Why, to the North Pole, of course," was his answer. "This is the Polar Express."
I took his outstretched hand, and he pulled me aboard. The train was filled with other children, all in their pajamas and nightgowns. We sang Christmas carols and ate candies with nougat centers as white as snow. We drank hot cocoa as thick and rich as melted chocolate bars. Outside, the lights of towns and villages flickered in the distance as the Polar Express raced northward. Soon, there were no more lights to be seen. We traveled through cold, dark forest, where lean wolves roamed and white-tailed rabbits hid from our train as it thundered through the quiet wilderness. We climbed mountains so high, it seemed as if we would scrape the moon. But the Polar Express never slowed down. Faster and faster, we ran along, rolling over peaks and through valleys like a car on a roller coaster. The mountains turned into hills, the hills to snow-covered plains. We crossed a barren desert of ice, the great polar ice cap. Lights appeared in the distance. They looked like the lights of a strange ocean liner sailing on a frozen sea.
"There," said the conductor, "is the North Pole."
The North Pole. It was a huge city standing alone at the top of the world, filled with factories where every Christmas toy was made. At first, we saw no elves. "They are gathering at the center of the city," the conductor told us. "That is where Santa will give the first gift of Christmas." "Who receives the first gift?" we all asked. The conductor answered, "He will choose one of you." "Look," shouted one of the children, "the elves." Outside, we saw hundreds of elves. As our train drew closer to the center of the North Pole,
we slowed to a crawl. So crowded were the streets with Santa's helpers. When the Polar Express could go no further, we stopped and the conductor led us outside. We pressed through the crowd to the edge of a large open circle. In front of us stood Santa's sleigh. The reindeer were excited. They pranced and paced, ringing the silver sleigh bells that hung from their harnesses. It was a magical sound, like nothing I'd ever heard. Across the circle, the elves moved apart, and Santa Claus appeared. The elves cheered wildly. He marched over to us and pointed to me and said, "Let's have this fellow here." He jumped into his sleigh. The conductor handed me up. I sat on Santa's knee, and he asked, "Now, what would you like for Christmas?" I knew that I could have any gift I could imagine. But the thing I wanted most for Christmas was not inside Santa's giant bag. What I wanted more than anything was one silver bell from Santa's sleigh. When I asked, Santa smiled. Then he gave me a hug and told an elf to cut a bell from a reindeer's harness. The elf tossed it up to Santa. He stood, holding the bell high above him, and called out, "The first gift of Christmas!" A clock struck midnight as the elves roared their approval. Santa handed the bell to me, and I put it in my bathrobe pocket. The conductor helped me down from the sleigh. Santa shouted out the reindeer's names and cracked his whip. His team charged forward and climbed into the air. Santa circled once above us, then disappeared in the cold, dark, polar sky. As soon as we were back inside the Polar Express, the other children asked to see the bell. I reached into my pocket, but the only thing I felt was a hole. I had lost the silver bell from Santa Claus's sleigh. "Let's hurry outside and look for it," one of the children said. But the train gave a sudden lurch and started moving. We were on our way home. It broke my heart to lose the bell. When the train reached my house, I sadly left the other children. I stood at my doorway and waved goodbye. The conductor said something from the moving train, but I couldn't hear him. "What?" I yelled out. He cupped his hands around his mouth. "Merry Christmas," he shouted. The Polar Express let out a loud blast from its whistle and sped away. On Christmas morning, my little sister Sarah and I opened our presents. When it looked as if everything had been unwrapped, Sarah found one last small box behind the tree. It had my name on it. Inside was the silver bell. There was a note. "Found this on the seat of my sleigh. Fix that hole in your pocket." Signed, Mr. C. I shook the bell. It made the most beautiful sound my sister and I had ever heard. But my mother said, "Oh, that's too bad." "Yes," said my father, "it's broken." When I'd shaken the bell, my parents had not heard a sound. At one time, most of my friends could hear the bell, but as years passed, it fell silent for all of them. Even Sarah found one Christmas that she could no longer hear its sweet sound. Though I've grown old, the bell still rings for me, as it does for all who truly believe. Merry Christmas, Curious George. This is George. He lived with his friend, the man with the yellow hat. He was a good little monkey and always very curious. Today, George was visiting a Christmas tree farm. "You can help me pick out the perfect tree for our home," his friend told him. "Keep close to me while we look." George promised to be good, but little monkeys sometimes forget. The Christmas tree farm had more trees than George had ever seen. He found a very nice one right away. Then another caught his eye, and then one more, and then another. George was curious. How many Christmas trees could there be? George could not resist climbing up the tallest tree to get a better view. He looked for the man with the yellow hat, but his friend was nowhere in sight. Two men tromped into the clearing. "There's our tree," one man told the other. The men cut down the tree and loaded it onto a truck, along with George. George held tightly. He saw the man with the yellow hat as the truck drove away. But the truck was going too fast. George could not jump off. He was scared, but still a little curious. Soon the truck stopped in front of a hospital. George peeked out of the branches as the men carried his tree inside. The hospital was a busy place. George jumped out of the tree. There was lots here to see and do. He looked at some interesting pictures. He found a jacket and tried it on. It's the doctor's coat. He played on a trampoline, and that's a hospital bed. He even went for a ride on a squeaky little cart, and those were books intended for the library. What fun! Then George spotted something very interesting, his tree. George knew that Christmas trees were supposed to have tinsel and twinkling lights and shiny ornaments, but this tree was empty. George thought and thought, and then he had an idea. Next, George noticed a pile of gifts in the corner of the room. The gifts looked pretty, but George was curious. Could he make them look even prettier? This red bow would look much better on this green box. And the name tags might look nicer on different packages, too. A nurse arrived, and what did she see? A monkey, and he's making a big mess. A group of children crowded around the nurse. They were all patients at the hospital. Even though it was almost Christmas, the children were not smiling or looking happy. "Come along," the nurse said, picking George up. "I'd better get you out of here before you can ruin anything else." A girl with a cast stared at George's tree. Suddenly she giggled. "Look," she said, "it's my X-ray." And George had hung up her X-ray on the tree. A boy laughed. "And there's the balloons from my room." All the children started chattering and laughing as they looked at George's funny decorations. "Can't he stay for the party?" a boy asked the nurse. "We don't mind about the gifts. It'll be fun to sort them out." "Oh, please let him stay, please," the other children chimed in. When she saw how happy the children looked, the nurse looked happier too. "Well, I suppose he can stay," she said, "if he promises to help fix the tree." George was happy to help. The children helped too. Some of them returned George's decorations, while others handed George the real ornaments. He scampered up and down, stringing lights and hanging tinsel. Being a monkey, he was good at that sort of thing. He was also good at making the children laugh. When the tree was finished, George helped open the gifts. He was having such a good time that he completely forgot he was lost. Until the man with the yellow hat hurried into the room. "There you are, George," he cried. "I followed that truck all the way here." George was very happy to be reunited with his friend. The nurse invited them both to stay for milk and cookies. "Ho, ho, ho! Did someone mention milk and cookies?" A man in a red suit walked into the room, his belly jiggling. He was holding a beautiful golden star. George's eyes widened. It was Santa Claus. "Well, who would like to put the star on top of the tree?" Santa asked. "George," the children cried at once. "Let George do it." George scurried up the tree one last time. He put the golden star in place carefully. Merry Christmas, Curious George. A very Marley Christmas. And keep in mind that Marley is a dog. Christmas was fast approaching at the little house on Churchill Road. Cassie and baby Louie wanted everything to be just right for Santa's big visit. But something was missing. Snow. Come on, Snow, let's go, Cassie said. Ya, ya, zo, eco, baby Louie said. Their big yellow puppy, Marley, pushed his giant head between theirs and stared out the window, whimpering softly. A roof, he said. But no flakes came. Well, the snow will come when the snow's ready, Daddy said. Come on, kids, said Mommy. Let's get the house ready for Santa. This was Marley's very first Christmas, and he wanted everything to be ready, too. He jumped in to help in every way he could, but Marley, being Marley, always ended up on the wrong side of right. That afternoon, Daddy brought home a big evergreen tree. But as he dragged it across the lawn to the house, the tree suddenly stopped. It would not drag. It would not slide. It would not budge. Daddy pulled. The tree pulled back. Daddy yanked harder. The tree yanked back harder. What the heck? Daddy said. Then he saw the problem. Marley never could pass up a good game of tug of war. Bad dog, Marley, Daddy yelled. Let go. Mommy strung colored lights on the bushes outside. Finally, she got them just the way she wanted. Perfect, she said. But Marley had other ideas. Bad dog, Marley, Mommy yelled. And there's Marley with all the lights, string of lights in his mouth. Cassie was inside cutting out a chain of paper snowflakes to hang in the window. She was nearly done when Marley came around the corner and spotted the giant, slithering, white serpent. I'll save you, Marley seemed to say. With three big leaps across the room, he attacked Cassie's masterpiece. Woof, grr, snap! And that was the end of the paper snowflakes. You big goof, Marley, Cassie yelled. Can't you tell a snowflake from a snow snake? Baby Louie painted a picture of a snowman for the front door. Hooray, thought Marley. I love to make art. Oh no, here he comes. Ba ba boo, Waddy, Louie yelled, and Marley is covered with paint. Daddy called from the living room, trees up. Everyone came running. Marley came running too. Mommy stopped. Cassie stopped. Baby Louie stopped. Marley did not stop. Oops, no brakes, and he crashes into the tree. Daddy got the tree back up, sniff, sniff, sniff. For Marley, Christmas had come early. Finally, my very own indoor bathroom. Waddy, wee, wee, baby Louie screeched. Cassie decorated the tree with ornaments, but the ornaments did not stay on the tree for long. Drop it, Marley, Cassie said. Daddy opened the tinsel. Marley dove right in to decorate. Mommy hung a stocking above the fireplace for each member of the family. Marley thought it would be more fun to play elephant. He wiggled his snout deep inside the sock and charged blindly through the house. Marley stampede, Cassie yelled. Take cover. At last, everything was just right. Everything except for one thing. The most important decoration of all was still missing. It was Christmas Eve, and the fluffy white stuff had not arrived. How can Santa land his sleigh without snow? Cassie asked. Zoe, Zozo, Louie scolded the sky. Daddy kissed Cassie on the forehead. Have you been good? He asked. I've tried, Cassie said. Really, really tried. Then Santa won't forget you, snow or no snow. And he won't forget my toboggan, she asked. Well, let's keep our fingers crossed, Daddy said. Okay, kiddos, time for bed, Mommy said. Santa won't come until everyone is asleep. Cassie and Louie peered out the window one last time. No, Zo, baby Louie said with a sigh. The next morning, Cassie and Louie were the first ones awake. They jumped on Mommy and Daddy's bed and begged to go downstairs. Marley was up too, stretching and banging his tail against the mattress like it was a kettle drum. Thump, thump, thump. "Please, please, please," Cassie said. "Peas, peas, peas," Louie said. "Ruff, ruff, ruff," Marley said. Daddy tried to roll over and close his eyes, but falling back asleep was not an option. "Let's go see if Santa came," Mommy said. Marley led the way. The living room was filled with toys and presents of every shape and size. "He was here," Cassie exclaimed. "Santa came." "Oh, what did I tell you?" Daddy said. Just then, from the window near the tree, came a giant commotion. Half of Marley was sticking out of the closed curtains. Both halves were making a terrible fuss. "Get out of there, you nutty dog," Mommy ordered. "What is it, big guy?" Cassie asked. She pulled back the curtains, and there it was, falling from the sky, blanketing the ground, powdering the pine trees, drifting over the driveway, hiding the hedges, and burying the bushes. "Snow!" Marley jumped on his hind legs and yelped proudly, as if he had delivered it himself. "Your wish is my command," he seemed to say. Cassie threw open the front door. "Yes!" she shouted. "Yippee!" "Zubby, zoi, zo, zo!" Baby Louie screeched. Just then, a yellow blur streaked past. It knocked Baby Louie smack down on his giant, droopy diaper and shot straight out the door. Marley had never felt snow before. "Ah, wet! Ah, cold!" He slammed on the brakes. This was not a good idea. Marley went into a full skid, flopped onto one side, bounced up again, spun twice, then somersaulted down the front steps and into a deep snowdrift. The whole family held its breath. When he finally popped his head up, Marley looked like a giant powdered donut. Marley raced past Cassie. He raced past Baby Louie. He raced past Mommy and Daddy and straight into the living room. He jumped on the new toboggan and shook the biggest shake of his life. Snow flew everywhere. Even Mommy had to laugh. Santa had brought the best gift of all, and his helper Marley had delivered it inside. "Zoe, Zoe, Zo, Zo," Baby Louie shouted. "Good bow wow, Waddy." Have a very Marley Christmas. And this is just a reminder. My name is Andy Bombeck, and I hope you're enjoying the Children's Story Hour today, which happens to be the holiday program. And coming up, I've got more holiday stories. I'm going to start off with a Hanukkah story titled Mendel's Hanukkah Mess Up. And then it's the poem The Night Before Christmas. And then Santa from Cincinnati. And if we have time, I'll finish up today's holiday program with the biggest, smallest Christmas present. Mendel's Hanukkah Mess Up. Of all the Jewish holidays, Hanukkah was Mendel's favorite. The yummy food, the glowing candles, the magical miracles, the glorious gifts. But when the 8-day festival began, Mendel always messed up. Once Mendel was frying latkes. Instead of grating 5 plain potatoes and 1 eye stinging onion, Mendel flipped it around. "Oi, Mendel!" Then there was the night Mendel blew it by placing sparklers instead of candles in the menorah. Sizzle, twizzle, pop. Oops. Bubby did not take a shine to that. "Oi, Mendel!" And no one could forget the time Mendel goofed and left a tray of jelly donuts on Rabbi Klein's chair. Splat! "Oi, Mendel!" From that Hanukkah on, Mendel tried to hide behind the scenes. So no one was more flabbergasted than Mendel when Rabbi Klein offered him the best job of all. "My driver isn't feeling well," the rabbi told Mendel. "I want you to drive the mitzvah mobile around town. You'll invite everyone to our big Hanukkah bash and perform the greatest good deed of the holiday, sharing the miracles of Hanukkah for all to see." Mendel's face lit up like the giant electric menorah on the mitzvah mobile's roof. "Me? Drive the mitzvah mobile?" Mendel's words stuck like melted wax. "Are you sure, Rabbi?" "Sure, I'm sure, Mendel. I have faith in you," said Rabbi Klein. "What could possibly go wrong?" Mendel revved the mitzvah mobile's engine and waved as he turned onto Main Street. Everyone smiled and danced as the song "O Hanukkah" blared from the mitzvah mobile's speakers. At the park, Mendel tossed a chocolate gelt to the children. "Happy Hanukkah," he shouted. Mendel's spirits soared as he played dreidel in front of Noshi's Deli. At each stop, he invited the crowd to the rabbi's big bash. Finally, Mendel turned back. It was almost candle lighting time. But he was so filled with joy, he didn't notice the big bridge. Suddenly, crunch! The giant menorah hit the overpass. The roof of the mitzvah mobile crumpled like used gift wrap. The wheels spun like a dreidel. "Oi, I'm stuck," Mendel moaned. Womp, womp, the police arrived first. Honk, honk, traffic started to build. Vroom, vroom, a tow truck pulled up next. Beep, beep, the Channel 8 news team arrived. Mendel was mortified. "What's the story here?" asked Rachel, the reporter. Well, Mendel's words mushed like applesauce. "Nah, I blew it again," he sighed. Then Mendel thought of the lessons Rabbi Klein taught him. He stood up taller, like the shamas, the special Hanukkah candle that lights all the others. As Mendel faced the camera, his words began to flow like silky sour cream. "Hanukkah shows us the power of every person to make a difference, to rise up like the Jewish soldier, Judea Maccabi, fighting the mighty Greeks," he told Rachel. "If a tiny flask of oil can light up a menorah for 8 days, we each have a spark to light up the world." For a flickering moment, Rachel was speechless. Suddenly, screech! A tow truck pulled the dented van away. To everyone's surprise, the menorah's candles were still glowing. "A Hanukkah miracle, live on Essex Street," Rachel reported. At last, Mendel arrived at the big Hanukkah bash. He felt as soggy as a leftover latke. The mitzvah mobile was the worst mess up of all. "Oi, Rabbi," Mendel sighed. "I'm so sorry." "Sorry? You should be proud," exclaimed Rabbi Klein. "We saw you on the news. You told the whole world the story of Hanukkah. And that's what this holiday is all about. Sharing the miracles." The crowd cheered for Mendel, the mighty Maccabi. That night, Mendel received the ultimate gift. He lit the giant menorah in front of City Hall. This time, there were no sparklers. The only thing glowing brighter than all of the Hanukkah candles in town was Mendel's smile. The night before Christmas. 'Twas the night before Christmas when all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced through their heads. And Mama, in her kerchief, and I in my cap, had just settled our brains for a long winter's nap, when out on the lawn there arose such a clatter. I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash. The moon, on the breast of the new-fallen snow, gave a luster of midday to objects below. When what to my wondering eye should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer, with a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles, this coursiers they came. And he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer, now Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen. To the top of the porch, to the top of the wall. Now dash away, dash away, dash away all. As dry leaves before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky. So up to the housetop the coursiers they flew, with a sleigh full of toys and St. Nicholas too. And then, in a twinkling, I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled! His dimples, how merry! His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard on his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a round little belly that shook when he laughed, like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work, and he filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk, and laying his finger aside of his nose, and giving a nod up the chimney, he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim, ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night." Santa from Cincinnati. I was born baby boy Claus at 12:02 a.m. at the Cincinnati General Hospital on December the 25th, many, many, many years ago. My parents had trouble deciding on the perfect name for me, but finally found just the right one in their soup. I was their first and their only child, so they took a lot of pictures of me. I was a pretty good baby, didn't cry too much, ate, pooped, peed, slept sometimes. I was jolly and roly-poly and had rosy cheeks from day one. the doctor diagnosed me with a jovial disposition. I went through milestones just like most other babies, but mine were just a little different. Favorite song, Jingle Bells. Favorite toy, a floppy stuffed reindeer. Favorite color, red. First words, ho, ho, ho. My obsession with toys started early. I played with them for hours. My favorite one was a stuffed reindeer. In fact, since I liked it so much, my mother got me several more. I took them everywhere. She gave me a pillowcase to carry them around in. Around age five, I started wearing a fake beard and mustache so I could look just like my dad. My teacher didn't know quite what to make of it, but my classmates were amused. I had the most clever dad. He made all my toys in his basement workshop. They were the best toys in all of Cincinnati. I couldn't wait till I was old enough to help. When I was 10, my dad gave me my first set of professional tools. I made an amazing elaborate toy that impressed him so much, he decided to give me the keys to the workshop, with one rule. I had to do my homework first. The neighborhood kids liked to watch us through the window and ask if we could make some toys for them. So we did, for their birthdays, special occasions, and holidays. We got so many requests that we started keeping lists. They grew longer and longer every day. My mom felt it was important that I had other interests as well, so she kept me pretty busy. I also tried my hand at various part-time jobs to earn some money. I invented a cannon type of toy that shot newspapers right smack onto people's doorsteps. It worked like a dream, and I was very proud of it. Then one day, right before my birthday, I realized I had too many toys, thousands too many, and I didn't have room for one more. So I came up with a clever plan. I would deliver one of my toys to every child in Cincinnati on Christmas Eve. My mom and dad helped me load them onto some sleds I tied together. Just as I was about to leave, I found more toys under my bed. So I stuffed those into my pillowcase, flung it over my shoulder, and I was off. The night was a huge success. The children were so happy with their toys that I decided to make it an annual event, though I needed to find a more efficient way to get around. Soon, children from all over Ohio were sending me lists of toys they wanted for Christmas. However, I still managed to get my homework done, get my driver's license, fill out college applications, go to the senior prom, and think about what I wanted to be when I grew up. Well, I got accepted to a very unusual college where they let me major in toys and minor in business. It was far, far away from Cincinnati, but I've always liked cold weather. It was the perfect place for me. I made loads of amazing toys and lots of amazing friends, including the future Mrs. Claus. Word spread, and children all around the world started hearing about my once-a-year toy deliveries. I started getting mail from, well, everywhere. This kept me busier than ever. When my mom and dad came to visit, they were very proud of me, but slightly horrified. I clearly needed a better system. I was able to shorten my list of toy recipients by finding out who was naughty and who was nice, and making two separate lists. That cut down a bit on the number of toys I needed. My new friends volunteered to help, but still, it turned out to be the biggest Christmas Eve delivery I'd ever done. Well, the elves were no match for a full sled, so I enlisted the help of some local reindeer. They, along with more than a little Christmas magic, got things moving. It was yet another successful Christmas Eve. Just as successful were my final months at college. By the time I got my diploma, there were so many toys that there wasn't enough room for them anywhere. For a wedding present, the future Miss Claus started looking for a place with more space where we could settle down. We consulted a real estate agent. He showed us various possibilities. Finally, found the perfect one for us. It had lots and lots of rooms, and best of all, central heating. After we moved in and fixed up the place, I made a big sign to put above the front door. And I put a different one in a window. I had a huge response and was able to give jobs to lots of people. And you know the rest of the story. Today, my workshop is thriving. We have to make toys almost every day of the year in order to keep up with demands. I'm jollier, my cheeks have gotten rosier, and my belly has grown a bit more rotund with each year. Mrs. Claus helps out in many ways, and she even perfected my special Santa suit. And best of all, I now have a large jet-propelled sleigh that gets me around the world in a jiffy and makes it less tiring for the reindeer. And thanks to my GPS, we never, ever get lost. Life just couldn't be merrier. The biggest, smallest Christmas present. Clementine lived in an ordinary house on an ordinary street with her ordinary mom and dad and brother, Charlie. But there was one extraordinary thing about Clementine. She was the smallest girl in the world. I mean, so small that she fits in the palm of her friends. She was so small, she had her bath in a teacup. And her bed was made from a matchbox. Most of the time, it was fun to be tiny. Sadly, Christmas morning was not one of those times. Santa brought her nice presents. But they were very big. It was time for Clementine to tell Santa that she was not an average-sized girl. Well, we could make Santa a giant gingerbread cookie and use icing to write that you are a tiny person, said Mom. Good idea, said Clementine. He can read the cookie before he eats it. Clementine spent all day making Santa a big, beautiful cookie. Then she went to bed and dreamed of all the tiny toys he would bring. And she's actually sleeping inside a shoe. The next morning, Clementine woke up, and the cookie was gone. A puppy waited for her by the fireplace, a very big puppy. Santa's never going to know how small I am, wailed Clementine. Over the year, Clementine grew, but not enough to hold the puppy's leash. The next Christmas Eve, it snowed. Perfect, said Charlie. Clementine can write Santa a message in the snow on the roof. He'll see it when he lands his sleigh. But the next morning, when Clementine came downstairs, there was a shiny new paint box waiting for her by the fireplace. A very big paint box. It must have snowed again in the night, said Mom. Over the year, the whole family thought very hard about how to tell Santa how tiny Clementine was. And just before Christmas, they came up with a plan. Dad printed out lots of pictures of Clementine playing with the toys Santa had left her. She hung them over the fireplace. You did have quite a lot of fun with them, he said. Yes, I did, Clementine agreed. On Christmas morning, Clementine went downstairs and found a huge package waiting for her by the fireplace. This Christmas present was the biggest one yet. He's done it again, cried Clementine. Oh dear, said Mom and Dad. Let's open it anyway, said Charlie, who loved opening presents. Oh my, said Mom. Goodness, said Dad. Wow, said Charlie. In front of them all stood the biggest, most beautiful dollhouse any of them had ever seen. And it was the perfect size for Clementine to play in. And then she writes a letter. Dear Santa, thank you for all the gifts, but especially for my new house. It is the perfect present for me. Lots of love, Clementine. And unfortunately, that's all the time that we have for today. I'd like to wish all the listeners a very merry, happy holiday. And please listen next week when I continue reading the novel, The 57 Bus. Until then, Merry Christmas, everyone.